Welcome to the deep dive. We take complex information, stacks of it sometimes, and pull out the key nuggets for you.
Making it easy to get informed.
Exactly. And today, we're diving into a really ancient but incredibly powerful narrative. We're looking at excerpts from the Book of Ruth.
It's a classic. Short, but so much depth.
Right. Our mission really is to unpack this surprising story. It's got loyalty, hardship, lineage. It's all in there.
And you find these unforgettable characters, some fascinating cultural insights, and, well, a connection to a major historical figure that kind of blows your mind at the end.
It really does. Okay, let's dig in. So the story kicks off in the days when the judges ruled. Not exactly a stable time. And there's a severe famine hitting Bethlehem, Judah.
A really severe one. Bad enough that it forces this man, Elimelech, and his wife Naomi, plus their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion,
who the text says are Ephrathites, which basically just means they're from Bethlehem.
Right. It forces them to leave their home, their land, everything, and go looking for food in the country of Moab. And, you know, we need to pause there. This wasn't just like packing up and moving states today.
Yeah, no.
Leaving their homeland, especially because of famine, and going to Moab of all places.
Yeah.
That was a huge cultural shift, maybe even a spiritual one. Moabites and Israelites, they had history and not always friendly history.
It speaks to the desperation, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Pure desperation.
And then things get worse pretty quickly. Tragedy strikes early. Elimelech dies there in Moab.
Leaving Naomi a widow in a foreign land. Just her and her two sons.
And time passes, maybe about 10 years in Texas. And the sons, they marry Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth.
Which is another layer, right? Marrying local women, Moabites. It shows they're settling in, integrating to some extent.
But these aren't Israelite women. That's significant.
Very significant, especially considering the cultural and religious context of the time. And it really sets up what happens next.
Because the tragedy just keeps coming. Both sons, Mahlon and Chilion, they also die.
It's just devastating. Now, Naomi is completely alone, except for her daughters-in-law. No husband, no sons.
Utterly bereft, as the text puts it. And still in Moab, this foreign land with these two foreign women.
Yeah. Just imagine her state of mind.
So after all this loss, Naomi gets word that things are better back home. She hears the Lord has visited his people in giving them bread. Basically, the famine's over in Judah.
Finally, some good news, maybe.
So she decides, okay, it's time. Time to go back home. She starts the journey with Orpah and Ruth, but then she stops them. And she urges them, really pleads with them to turn back, go back to their own mother's houses in Moab.
Yeah. She even blesses them, hoping God will be kind to them, just like they were kind to her and her sons who died.
And she wishes them rest, which, you know, in that context means finding new husbands, having security, a future.
And this is where you see Naomi's despair so clearly. She feels completely crushed. She says something like, "The hand of the Lord has gone out against me." She's bitter. But even in that bitterness, that deep personal pain, she's thinking of them. She's releasing them. It's incredibly selfless, actually.
It really is. So Orpah, she's clearly emotional. She weeps, kisses Naomi goodbye, and she goes back. Back to her people and, significantly, unto her gods.
Yes, she chooses her past.
But Ruth, the text says she clave unto her, clung to her. Naomi tries again. "Look, your sister-in-law is going back. You should go too."
But Ruth isn't having it.
No, and she gives this speech. I mean, it's one of the most famous declarations ever.
Absolutely iconic.
"Entreat me not to leave thee. Whither thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God.
Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried." She even invokes God's judgment on herself if anything but death separates them. It's just the depth of that commitment is staggering. Here's this Moabite woman, an outsider, pledging everything, not just to Naomi, her mother-in-law, but to Naomi's people, and incredibly, to Naomi's God.
It's a total shift in identity.
Completely. It's the emotional core of the whole book, really. Yeah. Everything hinges on this moment.
So the two of them, Naomi and Ruth, they arrive back in Bethlehem. And it happens to be right at the beginning of barley harvest.
Perfect timing, in a way.
And when they arrive, the whole town is buzzing. Everyone's talking, is this really Naomi? After all these years, all the tragedy.
You remember her leaving, probably looking quite different.
Exactly. And her response is just heartbreaking. "Don't call me Naomi," she says. "Naomi means pleasant. Call me Mara," which means bitter.
Yeah. for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me.
I went out full, she says, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty.
It's such a raw public expression of her grief and maybe her anger or confusion about God's role in it all. She's not hiding her pain.
No, she's laying it bare. And this name change, Naomi Tamara, it sets the stage for what's coming, for how Ruth's loyalty might actually change things.
Right. It highlights the emptiness that needs filling.
So Ruth, being practical, sees their situation. They're poor. They need food. She asks Naomi, can I go out to the fields and glean? Pick up the leftover grain behind the harvesters. Maybe someone will be kind.
Gleaning was actually a provision in the law for the poor, for widows, for foreigners. It was like an early form of social welfare.
Ah, okay. So it was an expected practice.
Yes, but still dependent on the landowner's goodwill. Naomi agrees, go, my daughter.
And wouldn't you know it, her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz.
Her hap, like chance or maybe something else guiding her.
Exactly. And Boaz, the text immediately tells us, is a kinsman of Naomi's late husband, Elimelech, a relative.
But wealthy and respected relative, it seems.
So Boaz comes out to his field, greets his workers, you know, the Lord be with you, and they reply. And then he sees Ruth. Whose damsel is this? He asks his foreman.
He notices her right away.
And the servant explains, oh, that's the Moabite woman, the one who came back with Naomi from Moab.
So her story is already known, at least a little.
It seems so. And Boaz's reaction is immediate kindness. He tells Ruth, listen, stay here in my field. Don't go gleaning anywhere else. Stay close to my young women.
He's offering protection. Fields could be dangerous places for a lone foreign woman.
He even tells his men, don't touch her, and says she can drink water from the vessels the men have drawn. That's real generosity.
It really is, above and beyond simple duty.
Ruth is, understandably, floored. She bows down and asks him, basically, why me? Why are you being so kind to me? I'm a foreigner, a stranger.
And Boaz's answer is key. He tells her, look, I've heard all about you.
Yeah, what has he heard?
It hath fully been showed me, he says, all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband. How she left her parents, her homeland, everything familiar, to come with Naomi to people she didn't know.
So her reputation for loyalty preceded her.
Absolutely. He sees her character, and then he gives her this beautiful blessing. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust.
Under whose wings thou art come to trust. That's powerful imagery. He recognizes her turn towards Naomi's God.
Exactly. He sees her faith, her commitment.
And the kindness continues. He invites her to eat with them at mealtime bread, dipping it in vinegar, roasted grain. He makes sure she's included.
And then he does something else secretly. He tells his reapers, let her glean even among the bundled sheaves. Don't give her a hard time.
Wow. That's not just letting her pick up leftovers.
No, that's actively helping her. And then he adds, and let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her. Basically, drop extra grain on purpose so she can gather more.
That's incredible generosity, deliberate kindness.
It truly is. He's ensuring she has more than enough.
So Ruth works all day until evening. She beats out the barley she gathered, and it's about an ephah.
Which was a lot, maybe 30, 50 pounds. A huge amount for one day's gleaning.
Definitely more than just scraps. So she takes it back to Naomi. Naomi sees this mountain of grain and is amazed. Where did you glean today? Who was so good to you?
And Ruth tells her, the man's name was Boaz.
And Naomi just lights up. Blessed be he of the Lord, she exclaims. Who have not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. She sees God's hand in this.
And then she reveals something crucial. She tells Ruth, the man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen.
Ah, the plot thickens. He's not just some random kind landowner. He's family, a potential redeemer.
Exactly. This changes everything.
So Naomi, who we've seen is pretty sharp and maybe not quite as bitter as she first seemed.
Or maybe seeing a glimmer of hope now.
Right. She sees an opportunity. She tells Ruth, my daughter, I need to seek rest for you. Security, a home, a husband.
A future.
And she knows Boaz, this kind kinsman, will be at the threshing floor that night, winnowing barley. Threshing floors were often communal, busy places, especially at harvest time.
Often on hilltops to catch the wind for winnowing.
So Naomi gives Ruth some very specific instructions. Wash up, put on perfume, wear your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor.
Okay, preparing yourself.
But here's the catch. Don't let him know you're there until after he's finished eating and drinking and lies down to sleep.
Interesting timing. Very specific.
Then, Naomi says, mark the place where he lies down, go in quietly, uncover his feet, and lie down there.
Whoa. Okay, that sounds risky. Maybe provocative.
It does to our ears, but we need the cultural context here, right?
Absolutely. This is where it gets really interesting and often misunderstood. It was bold, extremely bold. But it wasn't necessarily scandalous in that context. It was a culturally recognized, albeit unconventional, way of making a claim.
A claim based on his kinship.
Precisely. By uncovering his feet and lying there, she's placing herself under his protection, appealing to him as a goal, a kinsman redeemer. It's essentially a highly symbolic marriage proposal, asking him to fulfill his family duty to her and Naomi.
So it's like saying, you have the right and responsibility to care for us, to redeem our family situation.
Exactly. A direct, risky, but culturally resonant appeal. Naomi tells Ruth, he will tell you what you should do. She trusts Boaz's character.
And Ruth, showing incredible trust in Naomi, just says, all that you say unto me, I will do.
That unwavering obedience again.
So she follows the instructions, waits till Boaz is eaten, drunk, is feeling good, and goes to sleep near the grain heap. Ruth comes softly, uncovers his feet, and lies down.
Imagine the tension in that moment.
Right. Then at midnight, Boaz wakes up. He's startled. There's a woman lying at his feet. Who are you? He asks.
And Ruth identifies herself. I am Ruth, thine handmaid. And then she makes the direct request. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman.
Spread thy skirt over thine handmaid. What does that symbolize?
That's the key phrase. It's a direct plea for protection in marriage. The skirt or corner of a garment symbolized a man's protective authority. She's asking him to take her under his wing, legally and maritally, because he is a kinsman redeemer.
Got it. So it's a formal request, using symbolic language.
Yes, and Boaz understands it immediately.
And his reaction. He blesses her. He says, blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter. He praises her kindness, saying this act shows even more kindness than her loyalty to Naomi initially.
Why more kindness?
Because, he says, thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich. She didn't just look for any husband. She sought out the family obligation, the proper channel through kinship, even though he was likely older.
So he sees her prioritizing duty and family restoration over personal preference. He recognizes her virtue.
Exactly. He even says, all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. Her reputation is solid.
That earlier kindness and hard work paid off.
He promises, I will do to thee all that thou requirest. He's willing, but there's a complication.
Yes, there's always something.
He reveals, howbeit that I am a near kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I.
Oh, so he's not the closest male relative with the right to redeem.
Right. There's someone else with first dibs, legally speaking.
So this introduces the whole legal framework of the kinsman redeemer, the goal, and the related concept of liberate marriage.
Explain that a bit.
The goel had the right and often the obligation to redeem family property that had been sold due to poverty. In cases like Ruth's, where the husband Malon died childless, this duty could extend to marrying the widow to raise up an heir for the deceased, ensuring the family name and inheritance continued. It kept property and lineage within the family.
So Boaz, while clearly wanting to marry Ruth,
has to follow the law. He has to give the nearer kinsman the first chance. He can't just usurp his right.
Okay, so he tells Ruth to stay the night, sleep at his feet, but leave quietly before dawn so no one misinterprets the situation.
Protecting her reputation and his own.
Yeah.
Very honorable.
Before she leaves, though, he fills her cloak with 6 measures of barley, a generous gift.
More than just a gift, maybe a sign of his intent, a down payment.
Possibly. He tells her significantly, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law. A direct contrast to how Naomi felt she returned.
Bringing fullness back to Naomi symbolically.
Ruth goes back to Naomi, tells her everything, in Naomi's advice. Sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall.
Basically, be patient, wait and see.
For the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day. Naomi knows Boaz. She trusts he'll act decisively and quickly.
He's a man of action and integrity.
And sure enough, that very day, Boaz goes right where public business is done. The city gate.
The ancient equivalent of the town square and courthouse combined. All legal stuff happened there.
He sits down, and conveniently, the nearer kinsman happens to walk by. Boaz calls him over. Ho, such a one. Turn aside. Sit down here. He also gathers 10 elders of the city to serve as official witnesses.
Making it a formal, public, legally binding proceeding. 10 elders was the required number for certain official acts.
So Boaz lays out the situation. Naomi, he says, The one who came back from Moab is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech.
Starting with the property aspect of the redemption.
He tells the nearer kinsman, I thought I should tell you, offering you the first right to redeem it. If you want it, buy it. If not, tell me so I know, because there's no one else before me.
Following protocol, exactly.
And the kinsman's initial reaction, I will redeem it. He wants the land.
Okay, seems straightforward enough. Land was valuable.
But then Boaz adds the crucial condition, the fine print, if you will. Okay, Boaz says, but understand, the day you buy the field from Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead.
Ah, here it comes, linking the land to the levirate duty.
To raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance.
Marrying Ruth is part of the deal. Any son they have inherits the land in the name of her first husband, Mahlon.
And that changes everything for the nearer kinsman. He immediately backpedals. Oh. In that case, I cannot redeem it for myself, he says.
Why not? What's his reason?
He says, lest I mar mine own inheritance. Meaning, taking on Ruth, having a son who would inherit Elimelech's and Mahlon's property through her, would somehow complicate his own family's inheritance plans. Maybe financially, maybe socially, maybe it just dilutes what his existing sons would get. It's a cost he's unwilling to pay. So the land alone. Yes.
Yeah.
The land plus Ruth and the obligation. No thanks.
Exactly. His priorities are clear. His own immediate family's estate comes first.
So he formally declines. You redeem my right for yourself, he tells Boaz, for I cannot redeem it.
Clearing the way legally for Boaz.
And then they do this interesting custom to seal the deal. The text explains that in Israel, to confirm a transfer of rights, a man would take off his sandal and give it to the other person.
A symbolic act of transferring ownership or rights. Like shaking hands on a deal, but more formal and public.
So the nearer kinsman takes off his sandal and gives it to Boaz.
The deal is done. The right is now Boaz's.
Boaz then stands up before the elders and all the people at the gate and makes a public declaration. You are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi.
Claiming the property redemption.
Moreover, he adds the crucial part, Ruth, the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased or acquired to be my wife to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance.
He explicitly links the land and the marriage, fulfilling the whole duty.
And the elders and the people respond, we are witnesses. They fully endorse it, and they offer a blessing for Boaz and Ruth.
Wishing Ruth to be like Rachel and Leah, the founding mothers of Israel, and for Boaz's house to be great. It's a community affirmation.
So Boaz takes Ruth. She becomes his wife. And the text simply says, the Lord gave her conception and she bare a son.
After all the barrenness and death, new life, it's a turning point.
And the women of the neighborhood, they rejoice with Naomi. They say to her, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman. There is a son born to Naomi.
Isn't that amazing? They see the child as Naomi's, in a way, as the continuation of her family line.
They name him Obed, and Naomi becomes his nurse, cuddling him.
Talk about full circle. From Mara, bitter and empty, to holding this child, this symbol of restoration and future.
The women even tell her, this child will be a restorer of thy life and a nourisher of thine old age. And they acknowledge Ruth's incredible worth. Thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons, hath borne him.
Wow. Better than seven sons. In that patriarchal culture, that's the highest possible praise for Ruth. It recognizes her incredible loyalty and the gift she has brought to Naomi.
It's a beautiful resolution for the personal story, but then the book gives us this final genealogy, and this is where it connects to something huge.
Yeah, this is the mic drop moment.
It says, Obed, the son of Boaz and Ruth the Moabitess. He is the father of Jesse.
Okay.
The father of David.
Boom. King David.
King David. The most famous king in Israel's history. The text then explicitly lays out the lineage from Perez, Judah's son, down through Salmon, then Boaz, who fathered Obed, Obed fathered Jesse, and Jesse fathered David.
So this intimate story, this tale of famine, loss, migration, loyalty between two women, kindness from a landowner, navigating ancient customs, it all leads directly to the lineage of King David.
It's kind of mind-blowing. A Moabite woman, an outsider, becomes the great-grandmother of Israel's greatest king.
It just shows how these seemingly small personal acts of ascension, that loyal love, that kindness, that faithfulness, can have consequences that ripple out in ways nobody could have predicted.
Monumental consequences.
Yeah.
Shaping the future of a nation.
It puts a whole different perspective on individual choices and actions, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Compassion, integrity, loyalty, they mattered then, and they echo through history.
What an incredible story we've just walked through. Naomi and Ruth's journey. I mean, from the depths of despair in Moab, back to Bethlehem, navigating poverty and cultural rules, and ending up central to this incredible lineage.
It really covers the whole spectrum of human experience. Loss, loyalty, risk, redemption, hope.
So, if we're pulling out the key takeaways, what does this all mean for us, maybe? It feels like a huge testament to loyalty, obviously. Ruth's loyalty is just off the charts.
Absolutely. Loyalty that crosses ethnic and religious lines, which is remarkable.
And the importance of community, a family obligation, the kinsman redeemer idea, Boaz stepping up.
Right. The idea that people have responsibilities to each other, especially in hard times. And the power of individual acts, Boaz's kindness, Ruth's faithfulness, they changed everything.
It shows that even when things seem utterly bleak, like Naomi felt when she called herself Mara, hope isn't lost. New beginnings can come from really unexpected places through unexpected people.
Yeah, redemption can happen. Fullness can come after emptiness. Which kind of leaves you wondering, doesn't it? How often do we maybe miss the potential impact of our own small choices? Those everyday acts of faithfulness or kindness or just sticking by someone.
Yeah, like do we underestimate how those things might ripple outwards?
Yeah.
How they could shape things we can't even see yet, maybe even for future generations.
It's definitely something to think about. The quiet power of character and commitment.
A profound thought to end on. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the Book of Ruth. We hope it gave you a shortcut to understanding this